think.
So this is my next topic. Okay, so we talked about how things are evolving, and this talk is about how this distributed ledger technology is just not one thing, how DLT, AI are coming together, and what is this ZK thing in between, and how these things are coming together, and alluding to some of the barrier breakers, how are these getting together? Now, I was originally thinking that I would present some concepts and talk about some of the work we are doing and the results we have been able to achieve. But I changed my mind after yesterday's couple of presentations. One was an amazing presentation from Ramesh, and there was one on, there was some really optimistic, let's be bold, let's go forward type of a presentation. And it touched upon a few key elements of what it means for decentralized AI. And then the idea was, you know, be bold, be move. And then there was also, yeah, it's all good, but at the same time, there's a lot of scammers. Let's make sure that we have a real plan. And Gerard had a conversation, and basically, and then there was a debate, kind of, not the debate on TV, but the one over drinks last night. So, and then we came to an agreement, so I decided to kind of change the crux of my presentation a little bit on some of the pressing questions I think has to be answered. Okay, so this, before I start, this is my... I have no conflicts of interest. My background is healthcare and supply chains primarily. Spent like 15 years in healthcare, and prior to that, another decade in supply chain planning type of work. So how many of you are from the Web3 crypto world? Okay. And how many of you are from the traditional enterprise world? Okay. And anyone that are Bitcoin, Ethereum maximalist that would say everything else doesn't make sense. Okay, that's great. So now I get an understanding of, you know, what to look for. If you were on the Web3 component, right, what you will say, oh, this is the next big thing, it's going to solve everything, blah, 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 right? But what is the truth? Adoptions in enterprises, a big, big, big challenge. And I have successes, failures, evangelism that worked, did not work, to kind of say, prove it. And then also there are elements that we can talk about that is what's coming from the public side, what's coming from the Web2 side, what's coming from the blockchains, public and private both. And Gerard kind of convinced me to have a deep look at this blockchain maturity model. So I did that. And this is some of the things that I think it's a, thanks Jared, by the way. And this is a very important framework in my mind to kind of say, how do we weed it out to say, how do we get from that state of, oh, there is a lot of promise, but how do we really get it to real world adoptions? So, the real question for the or the public side or the Web3 side is, are these technologies, yes, there are gems, but will they only work for crypto-native stuff, or can it actually happen with real-world use cases? By that, what I mean is this NFT an on-chain-only synthetic event, but how closely can it model something in the real world that can be tokenized, basically? So on the Web2 side, if people are saying, oh, blockchains are not what it is used for, I don't believe in the blockchains, the question then is, the question I would want to put into that is, okay, minus these emerging tech, have you really taken a serious look at what your current business processes are and where this model could change in 5 years? If you have not answered that question, you are probably in a denial mode where the world is fast moving ahead of you. So the idea is to be on the middle ground. And the middle ground, what it is the real world use cases, compliance, tokenized, And it still has to stock the language of efficiency, which is the hyperproductive efficiency. That's the language now. And privacy is hugely part of it. And it has to relate back to the consumer. We keep saying, 75% of even this conference was really around, oh, this is my enterprise process. This is how I used to do things. The point is, now these technologies on the Web3 side have shown us, proven us, that the consumer has a huge centric place to hold. How do you find these things, right? I'm going to run through these slides because this was a part of last year's presentation as well. I want to quickly recap this. But what you really need is a discovery framework that just doesn't look at it from the technology from left to right, but also what your business operations can potentially be right to left. And that is why when people say, is it nail for hammer, hammer for nail? My answer is it doesn't matter. As long as you can move forward to the next vision, can you look at it holistically and have an understanding of what is the multidimensional transformation comes to? Now, I come from a payer background. So if I look at that ecosystem in that lens, What happens here is payers work with other payers, employers, providers, members, and third parties, right? So most systems, even today, and yesterday I think there was a comment about, there's a lot of fax machines still in healthcare. There is a lot of legacy stuff. Yes, it is. And there is a lot of data warehouses that have been built. And this is practically would be this, even the advanced enterprise systems probably are going to look like this, where you had a data mart, your AI layer, and everything coming in. But your interfaces to your external world, it's still a request response mechanism, right? So you're still sending your EDI 834s. That means it's, what happened to my claim? Okay, that request comes and goes right into your enterprise. Takes so much time and energy of your enterprise to put a response back, and that goes in back onto the other side. This is literally the situation today, and EDIs are probably even the sophisticated, but literally what happens is people call. People still call. There are 60 million calls that happen, and you put a chatbot, yeah, that helped, but that's just very, very office assistant type automation that Ramesh talks about from yesterday's things. Can we take that to the next level of how an engineer would think, how a scientist would think? That's the progression we need to look for. So you pretty much have a unilateral work queue in these enterprise systems, and all these technologies that you're using is all great. It will give you some efficiencies, but it is not any closer to how, if you put it onto a DLT system, doesn't matter if it's private blockchain, public blockchain, we'll get to that in a minute. But what it really opens up is a front door experience to your touch points. Basically, your payer and your provider gets a front door experience, your member gets a front door experience, and your employers, right now, at least in the payer space, would get a lot of visibility on really what they're paying for. People think the insurance companies pay for healthcare. It's roughly true only in 50% of the cases. In 50% of the cases, it's the employers that pay for that healthcare. So where is that visibility between the two layers? That's another question. And finally, if you really get into the next level of what you can really go is from unilateral queues that you might have managed and sophisticatedly get into a point of running this, you can now run multilateral processes, shared business processes. And that shared business processes gives you an edge of collaborative convergence. That's exactly what I was talking about in the other panel. Now we are talking about collaborations. What are these collaborations? These collaborations could be anywhere from collaborative discharge planning, collaborative contracting. All of these are now possible if you kind of take that network-centric effort, but the mindset shift should be, okay, rather than saying what's in it for me, can we look at what's in it for the ecosystem and then figure out what's in it for me? It's a little bit of a mindset that has to come along with it. In one of the reference implementations I talked about, the system was taking what took an SME 7 hours a day came down to 2 to 4 hours a day. It's a combination of DLTs and AI, and this was the results that we predicted from reported from last time. This gave me a huge confidence. If you applied your framework right, understood the right problems that can be solved, there is a lot of opportunity here. And where are these efficiencies? Okay, so there are some key insights that we touched upon last time. So as I said, blockchain is not one thing. It's more than crypto. Nail to hammer, hammer to nail, both approaches work. But basically look for learning from other verticals, learning from what's in it, try to get to the habit of asking the question of what's in it for us type of a thing. And last year I said, watch out for this, okay? One, consumer ownership of data. Data quality is a big thing. I said, privacy-enhancing technologies, look out for them. And then blockchain opens up to distributed AI. This is the very early ages of ChatGPT making the rounds last year. A year later, today, where are we, right? On the technical front, Ethereum L2s, Rust and Move, taking that Solidity smart contracts to another level of making it harder for you to write bad code, okay? Hyperledger on the private side, this integrations and Cactus. Generative AI pushing things. The agents are now there. And on the privacy side, zero knowledge has gone much, much, much further. Encryptions, they have been on the FHE side. There are first implementations coming out. Who thought compressed NFTs would take in so much of a transaction volume? It's happening. Subnet architectures are emerging. So this is when I said it's not just private, public. You get a lot of options right now, basically. And DeepIn is decentralized physical infrastructure networks. They are game changing right now. GPU is the new oil. So there are protocols that are collecting your collective GPUs from your phones that didn't work from 3 years ago. You can make money out of it now. So where are we on the regulatory side, right? So electronic trade law that I talked about in 2023, MiCA 2024, basically the stablecoin regulation in Europe, they have gotten to somewhere, good, bad, or ugly. It's the second thing, but at least there is that thing. And many countries are starting to do their CBDC pilot results, and the ULI type of activity going on in India has to, just let's think about that when we're looking at it from a bigger perspective. Business models, okay, why is Web3 important, right? So basically, proof of stake models, Ethereum, has been in 2022. What, it has been 22 months now since that change? An emergence of restaking as a business process. Beyond making money with my Ethereum to restake and get some more Ethereum, it's one aspect of it. But I'm more interested in the computer science aspect of it on what is the concept of crypto economic security it gives us. Meaning that if you have now to launch a new project, the heavy lifting that you have to do, you can potentially rely on these restake networks, and that is just starting. We'll have to watch and see and how it progresses over the next year or so. And then volume proofs, Saga phones. Saga phones were a hit. Every single one of them sold out. So when I say your consumers are going to hang out in a different place, don't be surprised if it's not on iPhones anymore. And these things are really happening. Why should I care? Why is this a big deal, right? Now, for every centralized option I have on the left-hand side, for an AWS, for a Google, you now have Akash Networks. You now have Filecoin. You now have Arweave, where your cost of storage is 90% lower. for a corresponding AWS instance that you can run. If you are a TD Bank, your competitor is away, right? So think about it. So these are real things that are happening. If you are AT&T, your competitor is Helium Network. People are literally running their devices, and they are actually part of the ecosystem. They are getting paid. The AT&Ts didn't give you that option, did they? And Facebook. And then, whether you like it or not, the decentralized movement is showing up and making their voice louder. Okay? So that is why I think the real way to think about this would be, what is in this multi-party ecosystem? And be open to looking at it from a constructive... There are some DLT constructs that gives you a lens which your traditional systems just doesn't. So what are these? You don't have to put every single piece of data on chain. Nobody asked for it. So the real question is, what is the counterparty looking for? Can I get that data dictionary defined in a minimal way? If you do not send data to n other places and rather let the models come in, you are solving many problems. You are solving the security problem. You are solving the problem where data or the request doesn't have to come in too much deep into your enterprise. You are getting a complementary to your zero trust systems. There's a lot to get here. The cardinality, how many times there are systems that are taking batch processes from one company and putting it over to another company, and then we worry about, oh, the data is getting lost, somebody hacked it. You can literally build a much secure system if you can truly rely on cryptographic primitives. And business functions of the nodes, DLT and AI have gotten ever closer, and star step and future-proof. That's my big point here. Now, what is this thing that I'm talking about when I say DLT systems, right? How is AI and DLT coming together, right? So this is something that important to think about, which is to say, you had data sets, and these data sets can now run something called a zero-knowledge machine learning models, which can prove to you that I did what I said I would do. I did the right model and the right data, and here is proof for you to verify. Okay, if I'm able to give you that, the question then is, what else can we do with that? So that is where the AI runs a verifier agent that hits and knows what's the intent of the person that is trying to do that. And if that wallet can be my personalized agent, then what can it do? It can then execute a smart contract. So now we have closed the loop between not just a simple machine learning model, but trusting that machine learning model that it did what it did, what it's supposed to do, be in a position to execute that on the smart contract, and from there, what can I do? I personally use it. If I know what the ETF inflow is, my wallet agent right now connects to the Ethereum blockchain and places a trade for me. Today, I do it. Okay? Think of the same thing in the healthcare space. What an opportunity that is, right? The next one, how are these primitives coming together? We have always looked at optimization systems, if-else logics, you know, that basically things that we have always done, right? The ZK and validity proofs that are coming in, what exactly do they prove? They prove that something was executed correctly, and then it could be on the validity side, and it could also be on the ZK side, where I can actually hide some information. When I say hide, if it is business sensitive, now you have more options than your private blockchains and private channels, and then you had private data in the private channels, but now you have much, much more artillery in your armor to say, you know, this can actually open up a bigger space for people. Computations on encrypted data on the FHE side. Basically, what's FHE? It can if, even if you have encrypted data, I can still run my compute on that encrypted data. And then, but these things are kind of, they are not mutually exclusive. And that is when if you overlay one on top of another on top of another, now you get into a point of saying you can run FHEML, you can run ValidityML, you can run your ZKMLs. Basically, it is getting to the point of saying you can now prove things. You don't have to put everything on chain as long as you can have a very strong proof system behind this. Threshold cryptography, it has gone much, much higher. I'm seeing people coming up with this notion of taking that encryption key, sharding it, sending it to people, reassembling it, basing it on particular NFTs, then I will give you the access. If you show me the badge, then I'll give you the access type of a thing, right? So to Gerard's point, right, there are too many shiny things. How do you tell the difference? How do you tell the difference? So you need to be, the skill that you need to have is to say if somebody comes and promises you the world, you really need to understand really where we are. These proof systems are great, but are we completely there? Not yet. So this is a baseline. This is as of this is sourced from the cost of intelligence. Your prover on an 18 million parameter model currently is about 50 seconds. Okay, and then prover to verify time ratio is 30:1. If it took 30 units of time for me to generate the proof, it just takes 1 unit of time to verify it. You know what that means? If you are one company that your job is just re-verifying what I did, you are wasting your time. Better give that admin dollar to clinical care. That's a strong statement, right? So basically, what you can do, this is what collaboration means to me. Basically, test it all that you want. But at the point, you have come to the point of saying, okay, there are cryptographic systems. There is no more excuse for us not to use them. Okay? How does this apply to healthcare? What are we working on? So the BHTY paper that got published, one is we took such kind of a model for an international ICHOM data set, which is the International Standards for Outcome Measures. And that is a V5, and we are running it for a client for us in the southern Indian context. We have been able to say what the before and after, you know, if you have to run this, the key thing is this. You have to understand how to efficiently use your proving, and it relates directly back to what we heard yesterday on saying, I had four things, decentralized AI. You have to prove your training, you have to prove your inference, you have to create a marketplace, you have to have a great UI UX, right? So we'll touch upon those, right? So there is a proving model, a model complexity reductions, and the on-chain, off-chain design patterns that has to go along with it. A consumer privacy engine that would say, this is how I'm generating proofs, and this is how I'm aggregating proofs. And then it opens up a whole lot of opportunities for collaborative approach that from that point on. So these are examples. So one is the concept of this ZKML model reduction, and the second is the concept of if I use threshold cryptography for me to store some data of healthcare domain into a wallet-like experience for US, what would it even look like? And how do I give access to people to get that into this? So these are the two papers that you'll find some information here. And then I would like to bring it back to what Jared was talking about, and I'm going to touch upon it a little bit. But basically, I think when I can talk more at a later point, right? So this initial documented, validated production and optimizing flows, I think we are at a point where we need to balance between, there were a lot of shiny objects that have come and gone. Now, where are the gems? Now, for the gems, are we providing the oxygen? Right? And you have to really balance that. And if you don't balance that, right, these things will still be another POC waiting for it time to come and the light of the day to come. That's the problem. And the second situation I want to definitely talk about is, if this has to be proved out, it is not like a traditional system where you have a cocoon to play and do it. Now you need that cocoon for the network. That's why a sandbox becomes important. right? So how do I get, okay, there is a B2B entity, the trial that we would, ideally this kind of a system would run is, there has to be consumer partners as well. Are we able to translate the efficiencies back into a token structure that can pass it back to the consumer? That is when any protocol can truly prove its worth to say, look how much transfer of value I have achieved by taking an inefficiency out of the system, and I have been able to find a vehicle to pass it to the consumer. Right? That's my response to our debate last night. And I have 4 more minutes, but I can go back to any of your slides or answer questions. So I'm here to...
So I pretty much understand the Web3 space. And then I recently focus on healthcare, especially digital health. So I know about both sides. And then yesterday we have a talk about the fundamental technology to driving digital health is AI and extended reality, virtual reality, and Web3. And the depending on the characteristics of technology, for example, that whether we need to think about whether that the as a technology, Web3 blockchain can be a mainstream technology for healthcare, right? For example, that I'm very interested in as an AI powered digital health or the XR powered digital health. And then my point is that I experienced for 30 years in all different body care industry, and then I know about if the key technology to be a mainstream technology driving the industry, they should be included in the core part. Means that the healthcare, the core is a patient and doctor,
yep.
Right? So at the forefront, right, is a driving value. But usually we think about yesterday, today, and later, all we talk about as the performance or the function of the blockchain, Web3 in healthcare, is not that layer. It's infrastructure layer, right? All talk about data and how to use it. That's usually, for example, innovation side means that the cost and efficiency, right? But further than that, to be a mainstream, there should be a driving value, right? So it should be cost and value, right?
Yep.
And then that in that point, I was very serious to think about that. For example, yesterday we touched over not just for the data, AI, whatever. To be included in the mainstream, we think about that. What the patient think about that. You think about what was the most successful the industry that in the blockchain. Financial,
yeah.
Right? Everybody know about Bitcoin, right? But nobody care about the blockchain, the patient. I don't know about the blockchain, right? So even doctor, right?
Yeah.
So have you ever think about that? Yesterday we touched about a little bit about the in the behavioral health, the mental health, we can apply that Web3 concept. But I'm very serious about in other area, actually the touch upon in the end point, that we can include Web3 and blockchain.
That is why in this side, if you really look at it, right, the members and the life events tracker here, right? That's the consumer. That's the piece that has to be in the center. That's why I said all of the talk that we talked about is efficiencies, what's in it for me, what's in the ecosystem. It really doesn't matter if the dollar doesn't go back to the consumer. You don't have a demand. Right? So you're basically, you know, chasing the tail otherwise if you don't have the member in the center. Right? That's one point. The second point is what I have learned from Web2, assuming let's fast forward 5 years, okay? Let's say there is the known blockchains or some other new blockchain. Who knows? But it didn't take people from move away from Orkut to Facebook, and that super killer app, my prediction, is going to be on a public blockchain. And you better meet your consumer there.
You know, it's said that a lot of the world had a real advantage of lot of the world got an advantage because the U.S. laid thousands of miles of, you know, telephony lines, and the rest of the world went right to cellular. You know, in some ways, healthcare is going to have the similar advantage, I would think, because we're kind of at internet zero. Like, we're on the fax, right? Healthcare barely embraced intranets, let alone, you know, real API integrations. So to be able to go from the fax machine to blockchain seems like a, you know, you should be able to show an ROI there.
Yeah, let me answer. This might be a controversial answer, but I'm going to give it anyway, okay? When airports around the world modernize themselves, you know who benefited the most? The worst airports in the world benefited the most. You know why? They didn't have much to lose. They built their best airports, right? And what was leading now looks like trash. So that is possible. That is possible. So that is why when I hear this question of let's lose the term SaaS, let's lose the term consent, let's lose the term interoperability, I'm all for it. Because the primitives allow you to do that. Okay? It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So that is why that staff stepping becomes important, right? To say, you know, if my time here is well spent, what I would regard time well spent is when you go back to your day jobs and things like that, right? If you can say that, how do I find a way to be somewhere in that star step, my time would have been really well spent. Question, sir. The use of the technology is not future-proof, right? The answer to that question is, what's on the other side of your demand, right? Who is using it, right? If it is another business system that is using it, now the question really to the question is, what is that counterparty looking for? I think that is a very good starting point to say. And the way we get a gut around these questions is, if people say, I need a better 834 response, we are saying stop it. If there is something else, we can think about it. If I can give you the accumulators up in front, would it then stop your behavior pattern, right? Oh, okay, I got your question. Yeah, so by future proofing, what I mean there is basically, if you wait too long, you would incur a technical debt. Right? My question is, if you kept on saying, oh, blockchains are, okay, I'm going to wait, the jump might be harder. That's basically what I'm trying to say. As opposed to saying, if I'm running an ML project, if I'm running an AI project, let me try to find how I can move my needle from the millions of dollars I'm still putting on systems that has a longevity of 18 months, you might want to rethink that. That's really what my point of future-proofing is, basically. You might not solve every single piece of the puzzle, but whatever pieces of the puzzle are already there, start to incorporate it and see how it looks like. That way, your jump wouldn't be that big, basically. Thank you. Thanks a lot.